Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. 100% engagement.
It's a total disrespect.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
I don't see that view.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself, Simon and Danny Murphy discuss Jadon Sancho. Through to the Champions League final with Borussia Dortmund, can he feel justified in his actions? Does he have a future with Manchester United? Meantime, where does Liam Rossignol rank in the harshest of managerial sackings? I spoke exclusively to Hull owner Atunu Lekali to get the reasons as to why the pair have parted ways. And after all the tub-thumping and heart-hitting messages from the authorities in the last two seasons, is football now all okay again with pitch invasions? This is Outspoken with White and Jordan. Danny, good morning. This is Simon Jordan, good morning.
Morning, how are you?
Good. At what?
Ooh. Yeah, not good.
Oh, yes. I see that's all this media work you're doing.
It is.
13 yeah. years of Qatari ownership. The way it goes on, Nasser Al-Khelaifi, they're never going to win this thing, are they?
Well, it took Man City 14, 15 years, didn't it?
I'm so sorry, say that again.
It took Man City 15 years, didn't it?
Well, I look at PSG, and I thought last night as he trooped off, is this ever going to happen? I mean, we know the man. We know how much that he would love his club
to win the
Champions League. But I have to say, I think they're as far away as ever. I mean, it was a phenomenal night, and Dortmund, of course, rode the luck. But when your name's not on it, it's not on it.
Well, not currently, no. I mean, ultimately, as I said, it took Man City 15 years. PSG have been to finals, they've been to semi-finals, and they're getting close. And they were close, you know, in losing a rather pedestrian final a few years ago. But yeah, they'll be disappointed, but I think you've got to compare apples with apples. It took Manchester City 15 years to win the Champions League.
I can't take him seriously with that voice.
I know.
I feel for you, but it sounds like you've turned into like some good... Barry White, you know, like this, that gruffy sexual kind of...
I don't feel very sexual, no. I can assure you.
It's 7 minutes past ten. Danny, I have a feeling you and I might do a lot of the talking this morning.
Well, it says a lot about him, doesn't it? Look, he's here.
Oh, very much so. He's here. He's left his voice at home, but
he'd have been
here.
One of those footballers who tried to play when he was injured. I like that.
So here's the thing, Mr. Murphy, are Borussia Dortmund going to win it? Is there a name on it?
Well, I think in cup competitions, you kind of get that feeling sometimes that your name's on it. But whoever they play in the final is going to be a hell of a challenge for them. But in a one-off game at Wembley, I mean, why not? They've got super talent. They've got pace. They've got experience. You only need a luck to go your way for 90 minutes. Of course they can win it. And I tell you, God knows how many fans they're going to bring over. Because I've played there a couple of times, Dortmund. And I remember the amazing fans. And they'll travel in. God, they'll bring their full allocation, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's a phenomenal achievement for them getting there, Simon.
I tell you what I've got to say. Sorry, just one thing on it. When you look at Sancho's performances over the two games, you know when you see a player who's coached in part of a team that's got an organisation and a real style and a game plan, tuck in when you haven't got the ball, double up when the full-backs are getting I've got 1v1s with the wide men. Positional play was great. His work ethic was great. And that comes from the manager.
Yeah.
It's so obvious watching a team that's well coached compared to watching a team that isn't, which I did on Monday night.
Yeah. Edin Terzic is superb. He's really got a hold of Borussia Dortmund. Let's talk Jadon Sancho, Simon, if we can. I mean, considering the direction he and Ten Hag have taken since their spat,
yep.
Can he feel justified in his actions now? He didn't apologise for whatever happened at Manchester United. And he's out of there. Is this a situation when the player has come out on top?
Not really. I mean, I don't think you cover yourself in glory if you're ostracised from a club because you've been criticised by the manager and then you go back and you feel that you're bigger than the dynamics of the authority inside the club. He's gone back to Dortmund. He left Dortmund because Dortmund wasn't a big enough club for him to want to be at. He's gone back to Dortmund. And at this moment in time, Dortmund have got something that looks meaningful because they've got to a Champions League final. This doesn't validate, vindicate or redeem this player because he's playing a few decent games, 14 games this season. What would vindicate him was if he'd have handled himself better. This is a player that has a consistent form of indiscipline throughout his career and challenges. And maybe they indulge him at Dortmund. Maybe they allow him to do precisely what he wants. And maybe that's great. And maybe people think that's something to be admired. I don't think that Jadon Sancho performed for 2 years at Manchester United at a particularly high level. And I don't think his reaction, whether it's ideal for a manager to verbalise his dissatisfaction through one player in the media, is debatable. Maybe he exhausted every possibility. This is a player, by the way, that the manager had invested enough time into that he wanted to send him over to Holland to help him with apparent psychological challenges that he was having. So there clearly wasn't an investment in a relationship there. And his repayment for that was that the player behaved in a certain way, which might explain some of the culture and lack of substance of Man United if that was allowed to be entertained. So this is like the argument, well, he's a good player. Let him get away with it. Oh, he's a good player. It doesn't matter what he does off the field. Because in the end, that kind of culture will bring you into a place where you have no substance. So no, I don't think Jadon Sancho has been redeemed. I think he's a decent player. I think he was always overhyped, always overinflated. We learned things about him at Man United that he doesn't have the pace to go in behind in certain respects that United were asking him to do. And for Dortmund, he obviously feels comfortable there. He obviously feels like a big fish in a small pond. So you take that big fish and you put him into a big pond and he becomes what Jadon Sancho became at Man United.
It makes me all the more curious to think what actually happened for him to go the distance that he went with his non-apology. I mean, he just refused to buckle, Sancho, for whatever reason. A lot of what Simon has just said, I agree with. But to me, the player is having the last laugh here, whatever which way you look at it.
Well, I think he's enjoying his football again, which is good for him and should give him the confidence and the platform to then go on and put that United episode to bed.
Yeah.
But I think Ten Hag was dealing with so many issues at Man United, he probably did have enough of Sancho. And I always think, looking back on my career when I fell out with a couple of managers, I always think the manager's right, generally, and you have to toe the line. I look back on some of my behaviours and comments and self-indulgent behaviour and think that wasn't the way to do it.
And do you regret that now when you think of how you behaved?
Well, mostly, yeah. One in particular I don't, because he didn't have the courage to speak honestly to my face and was talking to other people and I confronted him on it. But that's it's done, it's gone. I think I, like a lot of players through the career, can look back and think what a petulant, self-indulgent footballer with a big ego I was there.
So what happens when Dortmund get beat in the final?
Well, he still had a good return and he still got
well, the team's had a good return and he's had a few good performances in it.
Yeah, and so that gives him a platform.
If we're saying that he's redeemed himself by the very nature, most sensible thinkers will look at this and go, well, you didn't play very well for Manchester United for a significant period of time. And you have been called out for indiscipline on England duties, turning up with punctuality, a challenge for Dortmund, which seemed to have endured it a few times, and at Man United. And your way of respecting authority was not to accept your place in the food chain, was to stand outside like an outlier saying, I'm going to tell the sea to go back. I'm Jadon Sancho. I'm bigger than Ten Hag. I'm bigger than Man United. I don't like what's been said of me. so I'm going to behave this way. I actually think it's preposterous.
Well, I agree.
And I don't think he's got any redemption because he had a few good performances. Swallows and Summers.
I think the only negative here, really, he'll probably be sitting there thinking that he's done the right thing because now he is where he is and getting the praise he is and playing again. So he's probably thinking, I'm just...
He's an England team.
Well, no, let me finish. So he's justified. He's probably thinking he's justified. But he's not really, because the reality is that Simon's right, that actually prospective buyers and people will look at the way he conducted himself at Manchester United.
Yes, yeah.
The reality is he never had a chance at Man U looking at it now. He never really had a chance.
What do you mean?
Because the place is in disarray. There's no structure to the team.
Cobblers.
There's no structure to the team. There's no work ethic. There's no leadership.
It was down to him to shine if he could. Why didn't he shine? Back 75 million at the bid for him?
Very few players, Jim, succeed on their own. You succeed by being with a good manager who leads you well, and you have a good group of players with core values. I look at back of all the great teams, and you can say, yeah, he was a great player, and he contributed, but they were all led by great managers.
And that's Sam, you're talking about contribution and core values.
But you don't abdicate the players from responsibility.
I'm not. I'm just giving reasons as to
why. And the fact that he's gone back to Dortmund should be quite telling. Where was the big queue of people that wanted his services other than people that had tolerated him before, that were sitting there rubbing their hands on the 75 million quid?
Or you could change the word tolerate to people who knew how to get the best out of
it. Yeah, absolutely. Prostitute themselves to allow a player to be given a special platform because they don't understand the fundamentals of the respect culture. And the fact that he's not an England team, how's he redeemed himself? Is he in the England squad? Is he being mentioned to play for
England? Well, he's got a better chance now of getting a decent move than he would have if he'd stayed at United.
I'll put it out there, actually, Danny. Judging by what Sean Dyche to my Simon is saying this morning... a lot of people are agreeing with what Simon is saying, actually. I mean, if he's like this with Dortmund, why wasn't he like that with United?
Well, I just gave some answers.
And he said at the time that he couldn't wait to pull on the red jersey of Manchester United. It was his dream move.
Well, I'd ask you is, do you think Jadon Sancho would have struggled as much and been as much of a failure if he'd gone Man City or gone to Liverpool or Arsenal? The answer is no.
Mm.
The simple answer is no, he wouldn't. He might not have been a huge success.
That explains his fall. It doesn't explain his attitude.
No, and I agree with
his disposition and his outlook.
I keep waiting for the punchline with Tommy Cooper. It sounds more like Tommy Cooper.
Let's put it out there. I mean, has he justified his actions at Old Trafford this morning by going back to Dortmund and getting himself with his colleagues to a Champions League final? Is it redemption to some degree for Jadon Sancho? Lloyd's a big Manchester United fan. Good morning to you. What do you want to say on Sancho, mate?
He doesn't deserve to play for Man United, in all honesty. Man United's got its own troubles right now. They're a mess from the top of the club to the bottom of the club. But his attitude at United and the way he's called out for potentially not doing what he should as a professional athlete, he should have just done what every athlete does. Bite the bullet, apologise, work hard, carry on playing. So what he's done at Borussia Dortmund doesn't surprise me at all, because he comes across as though he's a bit of a petulant kid.
And Simon, that basically has been your line in this.
Yeah, I mean, I think no one knows the full intricacy of what's going on behind the scenes, but the fact that he wouldn't climb down, the fact that he has operated in a vacuum, the fact that he has history and form on this leads you to a conclusion, doesn't it?
Luke, good morning. A big United fan. What's your take on Sancho doing it for Dortmund but never did it for United?
To be fair to the lad, obviously, he's doing his thing. He's playing well at Dortmund, but it went right at him for him at United. But I just wanted to say to Danny, he's contradicting himself, because no one knows what's gone on with the situation between him and Ten Hag. So if he went to Liverpool or City, it wouldn't make a difference, because it's his attitude, obviously, is something bigger picture going on. And it wouldn't make a difference whether he was at Liverpool or City. Don't make sense at all.
Well, I think it does, because when you work under a different manager who has a different set of rules and a different way of communicating and man managing you, that's how you get some players to thrive and some don't. That's why they become the best.
If it's a discipline issue, how would Pep discipline him? How would Klopp discipline him? And any different to Ten Hag? If he's got to apologise, he's got to apologise, and that's the end of it.
Well, so because your respect for the guy you work with is very different depending on how you deliver discipline. Also, there's a group of players at Manchester City and Liverpool who are more... There's more leaders there. There's more experience. Whereas it seems like at United, there doesn't seem to be any cohesion amongst... You know, the other players should be guiding him in, or you, before you even get to a point where you're falling out with the manager. Look, I understand what you're saying. There's no guarantee if he was at a bigger club, his discipline would still be...
Bigger club?
Well, sorry, more successful at the moment. But yeah... there's no guarantee his behaviour would be better, but I think there's a hell of a good chance. That's why the best managers in the world get the best out of the player.
As well, he was already at City and they let him go, so it couldn't have been that great between him.
Well, they let Cole Palmer go, didn't they? There's always reasons why they let young players go, because they can't put them all in the team.
Look, I mean, does it somewhat annoy you that he's doing for Dortmund, clearly, what he should have done for United?
No, not really, because we all knew he was a good player, but he came in, when he first came in, he was overweight. Ten Hag sent him to Ajax to go and train and lose some weight. So it's not all been gravy for him. It's not all been good. He's come in, he's overweight, he's not playing well. He's took him out of the team, he's brought him back in the team. He scored a couple of goals, scored against Liverpool, AO, but it's not good enough when he's not played well enough. So he's had his chance, he's lost it.
He has lost it, you're right, but he might win it with Dortmund. Thanks, Luke. Chris, big United fan. We're coming up to half 10, but why not? Have a crack. What do you want to say about Sancho?
Just firstly, massive pleasure to ring in. I listen to you guys all the time. You keep me going through my drives around the northwest.
Good man, good.
2 points. You said that United aren't the winners in this. I feel that we could be, because November, December time, we'd have been lucky to get 20 million for Jadon Sancho. Mm. With all the media hype that's going on around him now, we've probably just bumped up to maybe 40, 50 million. You know what I mean? So we could win on a transfer fee in that sense, because, let's face it, the status of what was happening at for him at United.
Yeah.
Probably wasn't working for United. We had a player that wasn't playing. And then secondly, I do actually think it is a bit of media hype. I think he's joined a Dortmund team who are in much better position than where United are currently. We've just got to accept that United are in a bad situation at the moment.
They are. Just on that, Chris, as you're driving around, as we head to 10:30, going towards Ten Hag, are you comfortable enough that he goes into next season with you?
I don't know, but I don't know who replaces him. That's my thing. Like, if there was a massive standout, you know, contender, then maybe you'd think, yeah, get rid of Ten Hag. But he has had massive injury worries, you know, problems that, you know, we've not had a back four. And he's made bad signings as well, and he makes bad decisions sometimes during games that you think are wrong. So, I don't know, but we've sacked so many managers. I think, you know, at what point did you just say, let's stick with someone? Arsenal could have sacked Arteta, couldn't they?
Okay.
Two years into 10 years.
Chris, thank you very much, mate. Good points in that.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's ArmOdillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo, built to last, designed to impress.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
I think we're approaching a period of time now at the end of the domestic season, in between the end of it and the Euros, a number of managers will part company with clubs. And that's what happened yesterday afternoon in the Championship. Hull City going well and had more than a decent season under Liam Rossignol. So eyebrows were raised when the news came through. Liam Rossignol has parted company with Hull City. They're very likeable and ambitious owner. The Turkish owner, Atun Ilıkalı, joined me just before we came on air this morning. He was in Paris last night watching Dortmund get through to the Champions League final. But he took time out to tell us why it had come to this. So I put it to Atun Ilıkalı. Liam Rossignol leaves the club. So what was behind the reasoning for that?
I think we have been in charge of Hull City. I've been the owner like 2.5 years now, let's say 2 complete years. And what our aim was from the first minute to progress and make a beautiful team with the beautiful fans. So our focus is completely how to make this team go to higher stages with the fans and how we can improve the team and go to better and better successes, let's say. But in football, of course, most important thing is, you know, to just be united in everything so that the success can come more and more. So when you have a difference of thinking from the coach side and the ownership and the football mind of the team, I think it is not good for the team to go for a long-term journey. You know, Liam is a very fantastic, for me, is a very good coach, and I think he's such a nice person. But at the end of the day, we have to decide what is best for the club. I think we had to give a decision for our future, and our decision is, unfortunately, not to continue with Liam.
What did you not agree about? Why were your visions not aligned?
Actually, Liam has a way of football thinking and football style, philosophy, which I completely respect, by the way, and we respect too. But the football I want to see in my team is not the football style like Liam is playing. So you can think like this. I think he's successful. I think he's okay. But at the end of the day, there is a dream of me, of a football club playing a style of football which is not matching with his style. So this is natural in football. You know, every country even plays a different style of football, and there are so many different philosophies. So I'm just running the club with a team of football brain, I would call. When we think about it, do we want to play like this for the future? I mean, actually, we didn't want. Why? Because I'm more offensive style of character. I'm in life more offensive, more attacking style in my whole life and career. So in football, what I like and what we like actually is attacking style of football, which is, by the way, I don't say that Liam's philosophy is bad. Just I think it is not good for us. That's all.
But Atun, did your style differ to Liam's style when Liam signed a new 3-year deal back in December?
Yes, you are very right, because the separation started after January. So I can say that after January, we made, I think, the best recruitment in the league with bringing offensive players. Carvalho, Zaruri, Abdülkadir Ömür from Turkey. And these players are completely, even our left back is the most attacking left back in the league. Giles, you know. So the football mind of the team is making the recruitment in a completely attacking style. At the end of the day, you have to find a coach with the same mentality of the recruitment. So what I can say is before January, we were in the same page with Liam. And after that, I again say that I really respect his game of play, which can go to success. But I want to jump on my seat when I'm watching the team. I want the crowd to get more and more excited. So I can say, to summarize it, I think Liam is a very good coach with a certain football philosophy. But we want, of course, a very good coach with an attacking style of mentality. So that's, I think, a difference enough to go to different ways.
How was he yesterday when you parted company with him?
Yeah, we are very close with him. I mean, it's like friendship, you know. Ex-coach of us was a good friend of mine from Turkey. He was Georgian coach, Shotar Valatse, which is a legend into football. So in that kind of things, my relation with people is always good. And I think business is something else. I even couldn't do business with my brother, you know. So business is completely different. And I think life is different. So in life, I can say that there is a extremely clean character, Liam Rosinier. I can not say one word against him that we were together. He never made me disappointed with his attitude or what approach to us. So I think he's a very, very nice person. And I think he's going to be a big coach. He's going to get experience. We are the one who gave him the first big job. You know, before us, he only worked for 2 months. So I believed in him and he didn't disappoint me. Only thing is, of course, there is a certain thing for our target for the future of the club, which is different thinking makes the separation.
I hear you could be interested in the former Hamburg manager, Tim Walter. Is he the man you want?
There are some managers that we are thinking about. I cannot put one name in front at the moment because, of course, I have to thank Liam again to bring us in a good position in the league. Which is now we are attractive for many managers. Now we prove that we are determined to go to Premier League and we will do everything for it. So I think we will have many options. So we are not in a very big rush, but we will find a solution as soon as possible.
That was a Tunelli Kali, the Hull City owner. Simon, one thing we know about him, ask him a question, he'll come to you and he'll be honest enough to give you an answer. Mm. Hull just missed out. They just missed out in the playoffs. They finished in 70 points. Norwich got in the playoffs above them on 73. Yeah. Hull played 46 games like everybody else. They won 19 of them. They drew 13. They lost 14. They're seventh.
Yeah.
Now, he's saying there, difference in style of play. And I'm interested to get some Hull fans on to tell us about what their style of play actually is. It's a good point by you, Danny. But where are you with what Atune has said, Simon? Because, again, he's honest. Wait, I want a more attacking style. Liam clearly didn't.
Well, he's the owner and he can have his view. And ultimately, if he wants to support that with the economics of wage bills and transfer fees, then he can have that perspective. My first reaction was, I thought that their relationship was very strong. And the feeling that I got from being in both their companies that they were going in a direction that worked well for both of them. Mm. And there is this balance between entertainment and winning. And it would be interesting to see how... Because I think he's done a remarkable job for his football club, Atune, in terms of the attendances, the focus of the club. Obviously, clearly, Michelle's background, my partner is Hull. All her brothers are Hull City fans. I've seen it for myself. I've seen the change in the enthusiasm levels, the attendances, the relationship with the club from the Alams to Atune. But my impression was that Hull, finishing seventh in the league, whilst appearing to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory because they were in the playoff spots, the only one that you can look at and say as an outlier of the top six was Ipswich. Because you look at the West Bromwich Albions, you look at the Norwiches, you look at the Southamptons, you look at the Leicesters, you look at the Leeds Uniteds and you say, A, they will have spent money on transfers, B, they'll be carrying a much bigger wage bill than Hull. So which one of those would you be disappointed, besides Ipswich, with the fact that they got a better position than you? If it's a style of play issue, I'm always worried about owners that think that the style of play is the fundamental prerequisite for success. You've got to get out of this miserable division, and however you get out of it is the answer, rather than sacrificing a style of play over a very close situation where 70, 72, 73 points gets you in the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's being echoed by a number of people this morning getting in touch with the show. Morning, guys. I'm a Birmingham fan. I'm listening to the Hull owner talking to you there. He wanted a better style of play. That fills me with dread. Look what happened to us. Be careful what you wish for. I mean, there's a point to that, Danny. He might be ambitious. He might be all for an expansive style of play, as Simon says. As the owner, that's your prerogative. But at the end of the day, it's what the manager instills in his players.
Well, I mean, you need the players to play that way. And when you're competing against better quality at times or better strength and depth, which is what you need in the Championship, you have to play it different ways to try and get results. Look, the manager's unlucky because he's done a good job, and Simon makes a great point with the teams who've come above him. The reality is football, unfortunately, is harsh. And there's many managers who've been sacked when nobody's anticipated it or thought they deserved it. And he, you could argue he's another. The whole fans will tell us more.
Yeah.
We're hypothesising about...
Who plays their way out of this division? Most of
well,
the
Leicester,
time.
Look, it wasn't long ago, Si, that Leicester fans, were when they had that little bad run, were saying yeah, we were...
I was going to say.
Swansea.
As a whole, when you look at it, having been in that division myself and had teams that have come out of it, on the balance of probability, there's very few teams that play expansive football getting out of the Championship.
True.
Yeah. And if you look at Ipswich, and if you look at some of the other sides that have got into the top six, I don't think, at times, they were that easy on the eye. And I did watch Hull a few times this season, and it wasn't, with due respect, a great watch. I didn't think that when they played Sunderland on Boxing Day, Hull were a great, expansive, easy on the eye side. But you finished seventh in the league. So I remember Tune saying when he fired Grant McCann, well, he's won the last four games, so that means it'll make him easier for get a job somewhere else.
I remember that.
Do you remember
that? Yeah.
And he's kind of saying the same thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that he's a very good thing for his football club. I'm not sure this is his greatest decision, but he's going to live and die by it.
That's right.
And Liam will go on with, I think, a decent reputation as a result.
Absolutely.
Download, stand well back, listen. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Danny Bolton, trying to get back to the big time. I'll get on to another side of this in a second. But they won their League One playoff semi-final second leg in as much as they got through 5-4 on aggregate. They lost 3-2 to Barnsley at home last night, but they are through. Bolton Wanderers, a giant of the game. Have you played at their place on numerous occasions?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I was on the receiving end of some of Sam's great sides when he brought in the likes of Kocha.
JJ Kocha.
Campo, and he built a really good side. Come and beat us at Anfield once as well. Yeah, he used to hate going there.
Yeah. Well, they're on their way back, or at least they're trying to get back, because they are heading to Wembley. Will they go all the way? Will they get out of League One? Well, they just might. And we'll keep a very close watch on it. But after all the tub-thumping and heart-eating messages from the authorities in the last two seasons, is football now okay again with pitch invasions? I'll get to Bolton in a second. But at the weekend, Ipswich go up. And we saw, of course, we saw their victory parade the other day. And Ipswich fans, quite rightly, lining the streets, applauding their heroes after they did what they did. And what they did was fantastic, because Ipswich have headed to the Premier League, and it's Premier League football for Kieran McKenna and Ipswich Town next season. But those same fans, some of them, took to the pitch at Portman Road following their promotion to the Premier League at the weekend. So much so, they recorded it on their phones. Have a listen to this. Now, remember, fans in general very much discouraged from going on the field of play at any time of the day or night, even if they have done something like Ipswich did at the weekend. But this father led his own son onto the pitch at Portman Road and recorded it for posterity.
Go on, son. Go on, boy. Get on there. Get on there, son. Go on! Yes! Yes!
Now, for the last two seasons, this very much has been not okay to do, and we've called it out. And as recently as last night, at Bolton, in that match I just described, the League One playoff semi-final second leg, there was a similar situation at the end, because Bolton fans were thrilled that they had progressed. TalkSport's Mickey Gray was in co-coms, and this is how he described what he saw.
The relief, not just on the Bolton players and the manager, but those supporters, is absolutely huge. I mean, the scenes we're seeing in front of us now, I've been a part of that myself as a player, and look, it's fantastic. Yes, you've got to be careful at times, of course, when supporters come onto the field, but I just hope that the players get off and they're all fit and healthy, because there's still a big job for them to do at Wembley Stadium, either against Oxford or against Peterborough. But I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed that game of football. Absolutely fantastic.
So Mickey did say, yeah, they're doing what probably we wouldn't ordinarily want them to do, but they're on their own pitch. Simon, you heard the young Ipswich fan positively being encouraged by his dad to go onto the field. I mean, Danny, when you look at that, you think, where is this going? They are not paying heed to any message that goes out there.
I think
do not go on the pitch.
No, I'm, do you know what? I'm sick to death of the world we live in and all these rules and regulation, what we shouldn't say and what we shouldn't do.
It's a lot, Danny.
Context. Ipswich is not a hotbed for football violence or bad behaviour.
No,
they're a nice group of supporters.
There's no suggestion of that.
No, and the context of the game, getting promotion against the Huddersfield side, who were already down, whose supporters weren't going to be provoked, or it's, come on. Well, we just want to stop everybody's joy, and no problem with it.
No problem with it.
No, I think it's different. Look, if you're playing, if Millwall are playing West Ham the last day of the season, you know, you've got to be careful what's going on because you know.
But you can't pick and choose rules.
No, you can't pick and choose
rules. And when they're implemented.
Well, you can.
You can't.
No, you can't, Danny. And obviously, I'm going to sound like a killjoy.
Yeah,
but this all comes out, well, if you listen to it. This comes after incidents in the last two seasons during pitch invasions. Aston Villa's goalkeeper Robin Olsen was assaulted at Manchester City. A Forest fan was jailed for headbutting Sheffield United captain Billy Sharp at the end of their playoff match. The then Palace boss Patrick Vieira was involved in an altercation with an Everton fan at Goodison. We covered it all and we called it out for what it was then. At the same time, Jurgen Klopp called pitch invasions dangerous. Eddie Howe said they could cause a tragedy. So in response to all of that, the Premier League and the EFL quite rightly announced tougher new sanctions, including the announcement that pitch invaders at Premier League and EFL matches would receive an automatic club ban. And there you've got that man saying to his son, go on, my son, go on, get on there.
It's not something
that's why he should not be doing that.
It's not something I would do. Or encourage my son to do.
So you're backtracking now from
no,
your original comment.
But I've got no problem with it because life's tough.
How these, can you not after that rap sheet?
Well, you...
Klopp's got a problem with it. How's got a problem
the rap,
with
the
it?
The rap sheet.
Vieira
well,
had, a,
you,
had
you've
a
got,
problem with it.
You've got three incidents you named in how many pitch invasions over the years? And only one of them was horrendous. The Forest incident, that was a naughty one. But that idiot who did that could have done it in the middle of the street, for God's sake. I mean, how do you justify
but why did the Premier League and the EFL say that pitch invaders at their matches would receive an automatic club ban?
Well, I don't know why they've done that, because although they're trying to tick a box and make the rules, the reality is it's inevitable. It's like bad weather. You won't stop it.
I mean, are the Premier League
you're
and
not
the
gonna
EFL,
stop it.
Are they killjoys?
No, they're just trying to do the right thing. But in those moments of euphoria for a group of supporters...
And you're saying the right thing is just to ignore it.
Well, there's not
go
much
on
you,
the pitch.
There's not much you're going to do. How are you going to ban 2,000 people for life?
But football's encouraged it. Football in and of itself has suggested that it's a good thing to do. And I said this time last year, I guarantee you when we get to the playoffs next year...
It'll happen.
It'll happen again. Mm.
The world's most dangerous download. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
How do you view the world of punditry, Danny? I was talking to Sunnis at the weekend about punditry, and he's regarded as one of the best, if not the best, pundits around. I mean, you
yeah,
just...
Yeah, by him, though.
You just ask him. But yourself, how do you view it, Danny? You go into open-minded to be as fair as you possibly can on each and every occasion?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't ever remember thinking I'm going to come on a show and set my own agenda or bring something up to suit me or to get something off my chest. I just follow people like you because your job is to navigate the show and I respond. I don't think many pundits out there are too preoccupied with trying to get their own agenda out there. I don't see that. Most of it's quite reactive. I think some of the people who host the certain shows are quite clever in how they manipulate the narrative to get a certain pundits to bite. That would be fair.
Like whom?
Well, like the Sky guys when Keno's on, or you know, they know what they're doing there, don't they? They set him up and he bites.
On the subject of Roy Keane and more specifically Erling Haaland, we know that when they were players, Roy and Erling Haaland's dad had a bit of a set too all these years ago, to say the least of it. And it was a long-running spat, Simon, if you remember.
Indeed.
We've heard, not for the first time this season, Roy Keane has criticised Haaland, the former Manchester United captain, likening his play to that of a, quote, League Two player. That was back in March. On Saturday, Erling Haaland hit back at Roy, saying, I don't really care that much about that man. So it's all right, really. So he's not really taking the hint taking the bait, if you like, Erling Haaland.
Right thing to do.
Yeah. And then Roy spoke about Haaland on Sunday after the same Haaland had scored four in the win against Wolves.
We saw Haaland yesterday being brought off, not too happy, behaving like a spoiled brat. But because they win the game, he scores goals, it's almost forgotten about. But I think because the results haven't been going Liverpool's way, that's highlighted. But you'd fully expect Liverpool to turn up here today, put in a good performance, and let the manager leave over the next few weeks on a high.
Spoiled brat, that's all right if you score four goals, isn't it?
No, not really. No, because what? No, it's not.
All right. Might pick up on that a little later on.
No problem.
I mean, Roy had a few spoiled brat moments of his own when he played. Jason Burton, The Telegraph, calls for Sky to issue an apology. Henry Winter tweeted, Roy Keane's a compelling pundit, but his comments on Erling Haaland are difficult to take seriously. Not simply because of an old agenda, but because they're patently wrong. Well, no. Haaland's not a spoiled brat, says Henry. Just supremely competitive, a quality-born winner like Keane should respect.
Don't give over, Henry.
I think what Roy Keane said on that particular isolated incident was spot on. I think he was behaving poorly when he come off. Alvarez was coming on, who scored when he come on for his 100th game, who's had contributed brilliantly this season, and he scored four. Team are winning, save him for the remaining games, bring him off. No need to behave like that. I actually think Keane was right. Where I think Keane was wrong was when, for example, he overdid the, you know, he had a bad game on the day. Where he said about, his all-round play was like a League Two player, and that was ridiculous. But I don't think what he said the other day, I don't think it's an agenda from Keane to destroy Haaland because of some family feud or argument with his dad that he had years ago. I think that's nonsense. I think the journalists are looking for something there. To talk about a player's behaviour coming off when he's petulant as he comes off and say it was
a bad behaviour. Which it was.
I think that's fucking
But how many players behave as Haaland behaved when he substituted?
Quite a few.
Yeah.
But Keane would say the same about them. Yeah. I don't think he changes it because it's Haaland. I think the subject was Salah, wasn't it? Because they were at the Liverpool game talking.
I think he inhabits a role at times, Roy. But I can tell you something. I would much rather listen to Roy Keane's analysis than Jason Burt's and Henry Winter's on anything resembling football.
Well, Winter or Burt didn't play the game at the highest level, and Roy did. So that's why I would rather listen to Roy Keane.
But I would also hear someone that says something of substance, someone that doesn't sit on the fence, someone that's not worried about offending people, someone that says what they mean and doesn't prevaricate and want to fall the right side of the argument all the time rather than fall on the basis of an argument having some substance to it. Do I think his comparison to a League Two player is hyperbole? Do people use exaggerated statements to be able to highlight the primary point, which is his build-up play or his link-up play isn't good enough? Is it a fair comment? Yes. Is the extremes that he's gone to too far? Does he need to apologise? For what? He's got an opinion.
Is it a
he's got to apologise to and for
but
what?
The bottom line is, because of what happened with Alpha Inga Haaland all these years ago, the question being asked here, is it agenda-driven punditry at play on Roy's part? No. That's what this boils down to.
I don't believe it.
If he hadn't had such a high-profile spat with his old man, would he talk about Haaland in the way he talked?
Well, I've seen Roy Keane eulogise about Haaland and talk about him in a way that's so positive and so complimentary when he's playing brilliantly and scoring goals. So, no, I don't believe that Roy Keane's got an agenda at all. I think he speaks his mind and sometimes goes over the top, but not just with Haaland. And that's it.
You have to do it properly. If during his period of time in English football, Roy Keane has said nothing positive about Erling Haaland and being mealy-mouthed when he's been forced to say something positive, then you can make that accusation. No, look at the credit column, look at the debit column. The debit column right now says he's made two comments. Do they have any resonance to them? Could Haaland do more in certain aspects of his game? I think the answer is probably yes.
Can you honestly tell me that neither of you have ever served out an agenda in the media, in your time in the media? You've made agenda-driven
subconsciously,
comments.
Subconsciously, probably.
Maybe you about Wayne Rooney, Simon. Maybe you about agents.
But what's an agenda? An agenda means you're normally trying to advance something yourself.
No, you've got an agenda
normally you're advancing some particular aspect of your own opportunity or something you believe in.
Well, I think an agenda
I'm criticising Wayne Rooney for being a poor football manager, what's my agenda? What could possibly be my agenda? I don't have any view on
Wayne
Rooney.
An agenda makes it sound deliberate. And that's where I'd say, no, it's not deliberate. I think you can dislike somebody and your criticism becomes more vociferous.
Unconscious bias. Yeah. That's what you can have.
I think Erling Haaland emerges with a great degree of respect. He says about Roy, I don't really care that much about that man.
That's the right line.
So that's all right.
That's the right line.
Because I'm sure he's got a very hard and fast view of Roy Keane because of the pictures he's seen involving Roy and his father.
Yeah, but that's still the right tone to take. Doesn't bother me. Let's move on.
Yeah.
But we do know that there's bias. I mean, people do have agendas. People do have viewpoints. Well, you have an agenda to get the best show going at times. And so you'll pitch arguments against one another. That doesn't make it a bad agenda. It makes it a productive outcome. We're in the sports entertainment business. So when you're talking to somebody, and what do you want, Roy? What do you want? To listen to Roy Keane not operate at full throttle. And so the agenda is, let's load up some questioning that's going to get Roy Keane going for it.
That's
right. Because we're in the business of entertainment. So that's an agenda.
Yeah, but I think what Jim's saying is there an obvious agenda around Keane towards Haaland to try and put him down? I don't see that.
Yes, that's a basic question. Does what happened with his father come into his thinking when he's talking about Arthur Inga's son?
I hope not. I think Roy Keane has shown consistency in his punditry life. I mean, I remember him hammering Robertson, Liverpool, and that. Remember
when he went? Baby.
Yeah, when he went over to the official. Mm. So he's consistent in his criticism of players who act like children.
Yeah.
At times, even though he did it himself at times.
Ah, yeah.
But that's the role here. That's,
Is there any examples of Roy Keane having a positive bias where you can clearly see that what he's doing is looking at something through a prism where he supports it entirely, even if it's wrong? And I don't think so.
No.
I think that he's objectively good and bad in equal measure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
The world's most dangerous download. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast from. We're back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Flimsy stand slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's ARMODILO.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo, built to last, designed to impress.